Welcome to Knowledge Distillation, where we explore how AI is reshaping the role of the data analyst. I'm your host, Katrin Reibund, CEO and founder of AskWhy. Today, I have the perfect first guest to help us unpack this transformation. Someone who literally wrote the book on AI agents. Marty Kine is an AI strategist at Salesforce, former VP at Gartner, and the author of 5 books, including his latest, Agentforce. But before we were both evangelizing AI, Marty and I were both in the trenches of marketing technology, me at Datarama, and Marty analyzing for Gartner and talking a lot about Taylor Swift, before it was really that much of a thing, actually.
I was early with Taylor. It was, and I tell people this because now it's, there's actually a book that came out. Someone at, I think it was HBR or at MIT wrote a book, The Marketing Secrets of Taylor Swift. And I was there, probably 8 years ago, talking about what marketers could learn from Taylor Swift. And my actually did research around it as well. And basically what I said was that Taylor Swift was infinitely personalizable. People projected themselves onto her. And that's what you should do to be a modern brand.
Yeah, I remember going to one of those presentations. It was really definitively in advance and very, very interesting. Thank you for that.
Of course.
So just around where Salesforce acquired Datarama, Marty joined the strategy team at Salesforce, where we were colleagues for a couple of years. We've known each other for over a decade, actually way over a decade. And honestly, few people see the data analyst evolution as clearly as Marty does. So let's dig in.
By the way, I used to be a data analyst. It wasn't before Gartner. I worked at Digitas. It was basically an ad agency, digital advertising, and I did measurement, and that was my job. So I used a lot of Excel, to be honest, but in those days,
like everybody does, yes,
yeah. But that was my job, making dashboards, you know, things like that.
So last time we spoke was on your podcast, Paleo at Tech, which I highly recommend to anybody who wants to learn about the world of ad tech and how all of that came about. So we talked about my Havas days and my Datarama days. That was great, but now it's my turn. So first, how does it feel to go from writing House of Lies, which was adapted on Showtime, and consulting, to now writing about AI agents? That's kind of quite a knock for a writer.
It's different because the House of Lies you're referring to, that was my first job after business school. I was a management consultant and it was irreverent. I wrote it when I realized I was not going to be a management consultant, that I was going to leave the business. So it was okay for me to say whatever I wanted to say, within bounds. So it was very irreverent and a bit of a satire. And what I'm doing now is much more straightforward. But I think that, I mean, the writing process is pretty much the same. And also the tone, the kind of the flow and the tone is sort of the same. So it doesn't feel that different for me. It's just, I guess I'm holding back on the humor a bit. I mean, agents can be funny, but they're not that funny.
A little bit, maybe. And if I remember well, you told me you wrote the entire book without AI.
Yeah. I mean, that's always going to be true for me. I actually am one of the few people who enjoy writing. And a lot of people don't like it. And I think they embrace AI for that reason. But I like it. I don't see why I would give it up to anybody else.
So when Salesforce acquired Datarama in 2018, what did you think from your vantage point? You were at Gartner then and you were watching the MarTech consolidation. Did you see what was coming with the data and AI convergence? And most importantly, I would say, did you have a notion of how it would affect the digital analyst role?
Yeah, I think something was definitely happening. This was sort of the beginning of the big data era. Or a few years into it, like Hadoop, people talking about. And this is like massive amounts of information. And it's for an analyst, it's a different approach. It was before that, people can't remember the before times. It wasn't really that long ago. But the problem was the scarcity of data. There really wasn't enough. So you had to make statistical inferences and it was all aggregate data. And And what happened in the big data era is that actually there came to be a lot more data. It was coming, real time off of social networks. It was like the Twitter feed could be a source of data, your website, et cetera. Every event on your website could be a, source of information. And so the scale exploded. I think I remember a meeting. I don't know if I ever told you this. I went to Land O'Lakes. When I was a gartner, Land O'Lakes was a they're a Midwestern dairy company.
I
Very,
remember that
very.
name. They were a client.
Yes, I know. And they did it was the analytics team, and they showed their process, and they had a very impressive command center. So their command center, it basically aggregated their media data and some of their owned channels as well. But it was sort of aggregated using Datarama. They organized it using Datarama, and then they had it put into a data lake, and they had dashboards. And so they had a kind of an overview of all of their marketing efforts that was very impressive, and it was a small team. And I thought, this is interesting. So the key technology in there was Datarama, sort of sitting in the middle, and it was the convergence of the data, like the data inputs, and then Datarama was doing the organization at the campaign level, as you well know, and then making it available to the team. So it was sort of making data available in a way. And I thought, that is new. That was kind of net new. And that's sort of the space where the customer data platform came later.
Yeah, that was really Datarama's mission at the time, right? It was all about, I mean, the main problem was really bringing all that data together and organizing it. And I feel like today we've moved from that, not that that isn't a problem, that is a problem, it's a structural problem, right? There's complexity in it. But today we really moved sort of to the cognitive era, right? Where it's really about using the data that you have in a way that is much more semantic. That is about what does that data actually mean and how do you make your analysis meaningful for business decision making?
Yeah, every part of the analyst value chain, that the process of analytics has improved with technology. And I think, well, the one good thing about the analyst or data analyst, that particular role, is that it was always extremely heterogeneous. Data analysts were people who always use multiple tools. You never use just one. And also, they were data analysts or were people who adopted open source, early on, like R and Python. Data analysts were the people who kind of got to know those, and that was open source technology. So they're people who use tools as they appear, and so that's definitely true now as well with LLMs making it's like an evolution.
Yes, as you said, basically the tools have improved immensely, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like really, whereas it was really a question at some point of do you have good enough tools to wrangle this amount of data, this type of queries, etc. And the problem was really getting tools that were good enough. I feel like the problem has now moved to those tools are good enough, right? Your connection tools and your databases and your BI tools, they really work well. But the problem is that in between all of those steps, connecting to data, hosting the data, transforming the data, transforming the data for pipelines, transforming the data for analytics use cases, building your outputs, getting to your stakeholders with your outputs, all of these steps are handled by different roles, different people generally, definitely in different tools. And the memory and the context between those steps get lost. And so you basically get in front of your stakeholder with your report. The first question you're going to get is, oh, ROI, great. What are you using for revenue? What is your source and how do you get to that revenue number? And now you have to go back to basically like, where does this revenue number come from? Retrace all of these steps, which is across people and tools. And there's really no way to keep track of what happens at all of these steps because nobody can do documentation at that level. That's just not something that happens. And I feel like that's really where one of the benefits of AI and using natural language to talk to all of these, to generate the code, to talk to all of these tools and keep the trace of what you're doing comes. What do you think about that?
I think it's. I like to think look at it as a situ we're in a situation now where the tools, as we said, are getting easier to use. And a concrete example would be It wasn't that long ago when you really had to know SQL and be a SQL Power user to query data from databases. That is still true. I mean, people, of course, still use SQL. But now you can go into something like a CDP and just use natural language and describe a segment. And then SQL will be written for you by the machine. But they'll take, they'll take that nasty step of putting together these very convoluted nested queries. So you can just describe it. So your focus, you as the analyst are focused, what am I trying to learn here? And you have to be very precise in your instructions. So you still, as an analyst, need to know what you want to know. And you also need to know the data sources even better than ever. But the actual techniques like SQL writing, code writing are less important. So the tools are easy to use, but they're also getting harder to understand simultaneously. And the reason is because they're built on neural networks. Neural networks, large language models are just really big neural networks, are extremely large now. You can have trillions of parameters, billions and billions, and all of them have a weight and a bias, and they kind of feed into one another. And as a human being, we can literally not know if we have an input over here, a question, and an output over here. We're not going to know exactly how that output happened. Now, that's why it's unpredictable. So we're going to have maybe change the prompt a little bit to try to change the output if it doesn't. But what's happening in the middle is quite literally it's a black box. Now we can inform ourselves on the method, and we can, try to get smart about what's going on and have an intuition, and we can have an intuition if the output fits. But the process in the middle, as you said, the context setting, all of that needs to be carefully monitored. I think that the danger here is that we trust the output too much. We shouldn't trust the output too much. We should always be interrogating the data. You can ask models where they came up with an answer. You can just say, what are the three drivers of this trend that you're seeing? And they will tell you. You can ask them, how did you come up with this recommendation? And they will tell you. They work for you. You don't work for them. So, and also using common sense and stuff like that. So I think it's really an important part of the data analyst's job now to be checking, constantly checking and monitoring the output of, what their tools are giving them.
Yeah, I mean, that's why we consider our core mission really to empower the AI analyst. We're focused on digital analysts who wants to wrap their head around using AI across the entire span of the analytics process. So from data collection to transformation analysis and, final step. The step that the analyst would like to be the final step or hopes is the final step, which is presenting your stakeholder with, your output so that they can make data-informed decisions. And I think really the three main points that I see that an analyst needs to upskill on in order to become an AI analyst is one, and you mentioned it, is a deep knowledge of how LLMs work, but also a deep knowledge of how different LLMs work differently because they all have their personality, so to say. The second one is prompt engineering. Prompt engineering is how you talk to LLMs. I think as an AI analyst, you really need to understand prompt engineering very, very deeply. And that means that you need to understand how LLMs take your prompt and analyze and pay attention to your prompt. And actually, to that effect, I've created these little characters, the floofies, that help explain the mechanics of LLMs. And
they are cute. Engineering.
It's a terribly dry subject, right? So
very.
I was thinking, how can I make it something where it's not just me talking about it because people will just fall asleep? And it's incredible what you can do today with generative video. I mean, I've done all of those videos for almost no money, all of them generated with VO3 mostly, and I've gotten tremendous return from people who are not even remotely in our field about how much they understand better what LLMs are and how they work, which I think is a really important thing in the world in general. So I have point one, LLMs. Point two, prompt engineering. Point three, I think, is really if you're going to do analysis with AI, you're going to generate a lot of code. Reading code that has been generated by an LLM is not like writing code. It's a completely different skill to read the code and understand really what the code does. And if you're going to run that code, you need to, on your database, you need to understand how the code is generated, how good or bad it is, and you need to get good at it. So getting good at code generation as opposed to code writing, I think, is a separate skill. And most importantly, really, is keep your critical thinking. Like, keep your wits about you. It's not magic. It's a tool, and you need to become really good at using the tool. And as you said, trusting the output blindly is generally a recipe for disaster. In your book, you talk about giving agents strict rules, data sources, actions, and guardrails. That's basically what we're doing with analytical context, right? So what's your take on specialized analytical agents versus generalized AI, specifically when it comes to digital analytical workflows?
Well, I think there's a lot of kind of loose terminology in this field. AI in general, what does that mean? You know, it's become an umbrella term. It used to be actually companies avoided using the word AI because it had a bad reputation 10 years ago. And now people are, you know, falling over themselves to put AI in the name of their company. So it's changed. The PR has really improved recently. But I think in general, like what we say, I work at Salesforce, as you said, and we have this phrase, don't DIY your AI, don't do it yourself. Large language models are, they're very generic. And as a consumer, I could go to ChatGPT and ask it to do a workout routine or, you know, recipe or whatever. And whatever it gives me is okay. I can tweak it. Maybe it makes some mistakes. No big deal. But if you're a company, it's, you know, in an enterprise context, it's completely different. You know, your entire brand reputation is at stake with every single interaction with your customers. So you have to kind of harden it. And it has to be, if you're going to be doing personalization at scale, which is the promise of these agents, it has to be relevant. So it has to be grounded. And so there's a lot of LLMs themselves aren't applications. LLMs are its infrastructure. It's basically, you know, we think of it as like a platform, the LLM, and you've got to build on top of it to make it relevant. And a lot of things you got to build into it, the specialized models would be, you know, levels of trust and governance, compliance. There needs to be auditability for what's going back and forth. There's, focus on your particular industry. There would be some kind of an intelligence engine, so like a reasoning engine that's sitting on top of multiple LLMs. And you mentioned earlier that LLMs themselves have different strengths, so you should be able to select which one you're using. Or, you know, they have small language models now, so you can train your own on third-party data, and that can be very effective in certain kind of more focused areas. And also you need to have support for structured and unstructured data and retrieval augmented generation, all those processes like that. So I think that the more and more specialized the model can be, as long as it's making the output more personalized to your, and I come from a marketing context, so it's all marketing, more relevant to the consumer, the ultimate consumer on the end, then that's the way you need to go as an enterprise. But it's a long way from just a generic LLM to something that can be really adding value to the business. And so there's steps along the way that I think people don't appreciate. A lot of companies now are surprised at the amount of work. And it just seems so easy as a consumer to, you know, have a recipe or whatever. But as a company, they're like, why can't I productize and you know, automate all my workflows and all this stuff overnight. And it doesn't really work like that. The strength and the weakness of this new generation of AI is that it is not deterministic. It's not just this, then that. You don't know what the output is. It has its own kind of agency. And that's why it's good. That's why we use it, you know. But on the other hand, that makes it a little bit harder to control.
Yeah, I think that's true, right? We're sort of in this, a little bit of this magical era, right? This era of magical thinking where there's a confusion between getting a recipe for, you know, a Thanksgiving casserole and having an application that will do actually work for you in an enterprise context. And that applicative layer is not really well understood. Mm-hmm. Including issues of security around that are really not well understood at all. And reliability, you know, how to build, especially for analytics, it's really a challenge, how to build something deterministic. Because in analytics, no one needs random insights on approximatively correct data. That's just, in my entire career, I have never been asked for that.
Occasionally you've hit something brilliant, but not all the time.
Yeah, but who knows if it's correct? I mean,
oh, yeah,
really, you have to run code on data, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're never going to trust the output. And from that perspective, there really is a little bit of this magical sort of like, it will solve everything with no effort, and not really understanding, no, you have to still have a use case. You have to know what use case you want to solve, and you have to find a solution for that particular use case and make sure that that solution is compliant with the different aspects of your business. And from that perspective, I sort of really don't want to talk about this, but let's talk about it anyway. The big AI is replacing analysts scare. So you mentioned in Agentforce that AI agents work as reflectors, co-workers, and advisors. Where, in your opinion, does the AI analyst role fit in this new world?
Well, on that topic, there's a chapter in my Agentforce book. Agentforce is Salesforce's AI agent platform. And there's a chapter in there on the future of work. And I said it about writing that chapter in the beginning. I didn't know. I mean, my opinion, to be honest, was, you know, these models are pretty good. And I feel like maybe, you know, there's going to be a lot of jobs at risk here. But I did research, and I read everything I could find on this topic. And there have been a bunch of studies, not just, you know, McKinsey and Deloitte, but International Monetary Fund and World Economic Forum and Davos, they talked about it. And the consensus is, and it's really a consensus across all of these big studies of people who must be smarter than me because they've written big studies, is that, in fact, every technology revolution brings with it two things. One is a fear of job displacement. So computers appear, internet appears, there'll be massive job displacement. But then what ultimately happens is there are more jobs created. The difficulty is that, first of all, it helps the economy. So companies get bigger, so they need to hire. But the difficulty is in trying to predict what the roles are. And the example I would give there is that my entire career in the last 20 years, I was at Digitas with digital advertising, and now I'm at Salesforce, like cloud software. And none of this existed when I was in college. You know, and I was in college before the internet. So it literally, these are new jobs, but not a job that I at the time could have, you know, thought of. You're asking about what the role of the digital analyst would be. I think it's going to change. I really do. And I think in good ways. I'm very bullish on the future of the digital and the data analyst role. I think it's always, as I said earlier, a very flexible role. So data analysts are people who understand the business, good ones, understand the business, but also understand the tools and are open to using all kinds of different tools to get answers to questions. And the skill there is in trying to define the problem and determine the data sources, and also knowing if the answers that you're getting are directionally right or not. There's a lot of intuition and common sense. And so I think that higher level reasoning, orchestrating, choosing, selecting the tools among those that are available, knowing the business well enough that you can ask the right questions, all of that is still relevant, and it's going to be even more relevant in future. I think what will go away is the parts of my job that I used to hate, you know, when I was doing this, like building dashboards. You know, it was a very manual process, going and cutting and pasting data into Excel. And oh my God. And even just getting the data, it was a headache. Like, you know, you had to get the file sent over, and sometimes it was too big in the wrong format. Anyway, I won't get into that, but
our audience and us know enough about that. But I think that one of the ways as analysts we can sort of see a little bit into the future is we're in a way lucky enough that this disruption happened to software engineers before it's happening now to AI analysts, right? The AI engineer is a role that has now existed for the whole of 2 long years, which in AI time is 2 millennia of
generation.
History,
yeah.
Right? And obviously, AskWise is a startup, so we have an engineering team, and we've seen very clearly from the very beginning where we started hiring and how difficult it was to hire software engineers that had any experience with code generation and understood how LLMs work, etc. And so we had to have a selection process that would look for people who had the potential to switch, not necessarily had already switched. Today, and this is only 1 year later, we don't have to do that anymore. Today, it's a given for software engineers. And, I've written a lot about the software engineering process versus the analytics process, how they're different and how you can't simply take Cursor and apply it to analytics because it just doesn't work for the workflow of an analyst. I really, really do think that something like this will happen to analysts. And that the same thing will happen in terms of, yes, you always need to be a good software engineer. You still need to be a good software engineer in order to understand how to use the code that you've generated and create an application that has all the different bits and pieces, security, etc. You still need to be a good analyst to understand what it is your stakeholder wants or needs, what it is your business does, what are the steps involved to getting that answer, given your setup, given your data layer, given your data structure, etc. And then you have to orchestrate those steps. And this is, I think, where a lot of the difference really is. So we're focused on giving analysts repeatable workflows with AI. We call that skills. I think that once you package your workflows and you have an AI doing a lot of the steps for you, your role as an analyst really changes more from being an operator of a platform, or, you know, in the case of a BI tool, you know, I was joking about, oh, so many clicks. Setting up a dashboard is what used to be a lot of clicks, right? To select the variables and the charts, etc., a lot of clicks. To basically being an orchestrator of code that will control what is being done in the different pieces in the analytics process so that you get to the output that you need. Do you have a view of how that switch from operator to orchestrator will work in practice? Do you see that around you at all?
Well, I think there's always been a difference. I don't know how to say this. There's always been a difference between good data analysts and the other ones.
Yes, that's true. And that is very well said. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to, you know, if anybody out there is one of the other ones, which I doubt it, because you wouldn't be listening to this if you were, but I think that, you know, then this is a role people, you know, as data analysts, you're like, oh, that's a low level role, but it's underestimated. I think you can do more with a single person who's very good in that role than you can anywhere else in the entire enterprise, I would say. And when I realized that, I was at Gartner and I went to a company on the West Coast. It was like a big computer company. They sold hardware. And there was one, they hired one guy there, and he was a data analyst, and he came up with a new way to segment their market so they could change their go-to-market policy, go-to-market practice, and it worked really well. But it was just him, and he took it upon himself to like ask the right questions and get the right, and he's like, oh, maybe we try this different segmentation method, and he didn't get enough credit, in my opinion, because he actually turned that business around. And that's one data analyst. So I think that kind of a person who can come in and ask super smart questions and apply the right tools and, you know what's going on, will always be very valuable. There's no existing AI process that could replace such a kind of a broad orchestrator, as you said, that kind of a thinker. But it's the lower level, the analysts who are content to focus on a single channel, single task that can be automated, who are content to do a single kind of a job and not ask deeper questions. Those people are in danger. They're in trouble. I think I am optimistic about not just data analysts, but people in general, because people are very adaptable human beings. I think that's how we've survived. And yeah. So people, whenever anyone asks me, oh, the ad agency is doomed. And my thought is, you worked in an ad agency. I'm like, The ad agency is really just a bunch of people, and they can see what's going on even better than we can, and they can change what they do, change their what they offer. So the ad agency is not going anywhere, you know, it'll be around. And it's just this adaptability, this constant change. I was at a dinner in Chicago this week, and it was these parents talking about their kids, like, oh, I'm so worried about, I don't know what to tell my kids. Should they learn how to code? Should they? And I'm thinking, don't tell them anything. You know, they'll figure it out. But whatever they do, you know, 2 years from now, if there's something they need to know how to do, they'll learn how to do it. And then they'll kind of apply for those jobs and so on. So I think adaptability is key.
Learning, in your age, as we all are a testimony, both of us are a testimony to that.
Yeah, that's right. You got to keep learning. Yeah, I mean, you and I, we've studied LLMs, and that's in the past couple of years. And that's not easy to understand how those work. I mean, no, I challenge you, whoever is out there, try to figure out exactly how they work. And it's not easy.
It's not that simple. And then try to explain it simply. That's really, it's very interesting. So if you think about ultimately this evolution, right, of tasks that can be automated that disappear, that is not new. I think that what is probably new is the pace at which it's happening with LLMs. It is certainly faster than anything else. I still don't think that somehow this is the be-all of, you know, transforming everything into the bots are going to do everything and the humans are going to be obsolete. I just can't see that.
Either way, you know, there's rising unemployment apparently now. I was just reading that. And every story about this said, oh, it's AI. It's all caused by AI. And I thought, well, you know, there's throughout my working life, there's been unemployment and there have been periods when people are laid off and we didn't have any AI to blame. There was something else. The interest rates were being blamed. So I think it's going to be a scapegoat now for any kind of bad news.
And obviously, it's a better story than, you know, we overhired and then now we have
or our companies are badly managed.
Yes, of course they're not. No, absolutely not. Given that example that you gave about this, you know, this AI analyst, it's a reality of the data analyst role in most organizations, except if your organization's product really is analytics, right? But except for that exception, the data analyst doesn't make decision. The data analyst support a business stakeholder who makes decisions. And it is true that it is very often the business stakeholder that gets the credit.
Yeah.
And not necessarily the data analyst that had the brilliance in the case of, you know, your data analyst there to find another way to segment the business, which is, if it's actually working commercially, that's huge, right? It's absolutely huge. I feel that for a good AI analyst who's able to understand how to use these tools well in order to explore opportunities in data, like opportunities in analysis, it will just make this something that is easier to get to, because you'll just be able to circle through scenarios faster. Because I've always felt that this was the one thing that was hindering the creative process in analytics, is it is very costly to test a hypothesis. Trying something takes a long time. And that's where I think this orchestration aspect is very helpful, because imagine you have one analysis process, you have your data, you have it's organized the right way, etc. And now you want to test 6 hypotheses with small variations. You can run them in parallel in 6 tabs, and they will call you when they need decisions from your side. And you can now be a lot more effective at exploring, finding those gems.
Yeah, I think also underestimated, in my opinion, is this sort of role of like a presenter agent, or it's the UX component of, because data analysis is, you know, it's numerical and it's quantitative, but the way that quite often data-driven decisions are spread through an organization, particularly through the business side of the organization, is through visuals. You know, it's always through like powerful, useful visuals. Some way visual will convince people where numbers don't, even if it's exactly the same information. And creating those visuals is something that, you know, I think AI is going to be very good at, and it'll be instantaneous. And that was not always true, like trying to think about exactly the right way. And And so optimizing the kind of the visual display of information, if you will, is something that's going to be increasingly automated, but I think very powerful for this role going forward. I know that the part of my job when I did it that I liked the least was trying to come up with the right charts and graphs. Not very visual, you know. A lot of quantitative people really aren't. So our UX skills are not so great.
I think nobody is, equally strong across the entire
No.
process. I also think this is where LLMs really power the AI analyst. I'm thinking of it as like a full stack extension of the skill set, where I'm never going to be a data engineer. I'm not good enough at SQL, but given a good LLM, I can generate code that I would not have written by myself, because it would just have taken too much time. So I can move left towards more technical, left of the stack towards, more technical aspects. But also, nobody is equally strong in analysis, visualization, storytelling, translating insights into different ways of presenting them to literally different people who will react to different metaphors, or people who hate metaphors, or whatever it is, right? Ultimately, you end up presenting to somebody. You need to present to whoever these people are with what you know that will get them to actually break through and understand what they're looking at, right? And that, or quite frankly, just business domains. I mean, you ask me to do an analysis for supply chain optimization, I have no idea what the key metrics are. None. But with a good LLM, I'll do something decent. I'll have a notion of what we're talking about, and I'm an analyst, so like I'll be able to make it happen. And so there's also an extension of the skill set to the right towards more of the business side. And I think that that full stack extension is really something that AI analysts should embrace to move away from that commoditization that you talked about.
And I think what you know these think about the that LLM is not a person. They don't have lives. They're basically like somebody who, a blank slate who went into a library and read every single book, like literally every book in the library. That's who they are. But they don't have to negotiate with people. They don't need to go around, drive to the store and all this stuff that we do as human beings that we take for granted, and how to deal with other people and difficult people and not difficult people. And so that whole element of being human, which is so important for marketing, it's basically the message that we're transferring to our consumer, we're connecting with them, is something that an LLM has to mimic based on what it's read. But it's never going to be as convincing as if we do it, or if at least we guide it, we as human beings, because we will always be better at being human. And so I think that like this idea of common sense is underestimated, because humans, we it's just that we take it for granted. But there's things that, like, for instance, the first version of GPT, it wasn't good at adding. Like if you put in what's 3 + 3, and people, why didn't it know that? It knows, the history of the French Revolution. And the reason was because that's sort of common sense. And I guess it didn't show up in enough books. So.
Yes, so there is still hope for us humans, right? Agentforce, just came out in June, right? I think it was in June 2025.
Yeah,
Yes.
June.
So when you're thinking, I mean, you're a writer, right? So I imagine you're going to continue writing. Are you already thinking about your next book? Is there a sequel to The Agent Revolution? Are you going for a sci-fi novel? What's happening?
I don't think I would inflict my fiction on anybody. Not sure about that. Yeah, no, I always, I mean, I have a bunch of ideas. I had the Paleo Ad Tech podcast, so I wanted to do a book based on that. It's like the history of ad tech.
That would be great.
I think that would be really interesting to a small group of people.
Yes.
So it'd be like a niche title, probably, because most people don't really care how ads are served,
Really?
and
Really?
they should. But I got very interested when I was thinking about the future of work and looking at all those very thoughtful pieces on, where work is going. And I got interested in trying to predict the future. So I think I'm working on something that's sort of more about like a futurist point of view on where we're going. And it's very interesting. I mean, you have to do scenarios. I don't think anyone can exactly know where we're going. But there's a lot there, and AI it will change things. I mean, the world of tomorrow will not be the same as the world of today, but then it never is.
It never is.
Nope.
And yeah, I'm looking forward to reading that. So you're at work on the book already, or you're like sort of in the phase where you're thinking about it?
No, I do. Well, I always do a lot of research first. The writing part is actually easy. Like the Agentforce book I wrote in about a month, but the research part took many months. And the research part is basically assembling the facts and putting them in the right order. So you could see how if I have that in front of me, doing the writing part would be much easier.
Yes.
So I'm in the fact gathering.
Oh, I understand. I when I produce content, I do the same thing. I have to have my structure in front of me, and then wrapping around is that's easy.
The information, the actual data points. Yeah.
So where can people find Agentforce?
Oh, well, the best place to go to Amazon.com. And I mean, it's available on any online bookseller. And it's called Agentforce. That's the name. And then the author is me. So it's easy to find. And I also have a website, Martin Kine or Marty Kine, either one.com, KIHN.
Oh, you got both URLs? Good.
Yeah, years ago I did. And there is another Martin Kine out there in South America. And we became friends because we would sometimes get each other's email. That's another story. Luckily, he was a hipster and his Instagram feed was so impressive. He was like, he really improved my brand.
Well, Marty, it was really great. Thank you very much for being Knowledge Distillation's first guest.
And yeah, thank you for inviting me. I'm honored.
Well, talk to you soon. Bye, Marty.
Bye-bye.
That's it for our first episode of Knowledge Distillation. If you're building your own AI analyst workflow, check out AskWhy.ai, where we're practicing what Marty and I just preached out about context engineering and intelligent analytics automation. Thanks for listening, and remember, bots won't win, AI analysts will. Thanks to Tom Fuller for the editing magic on this episode. If you want to work with Tom, head to AskWhy.ai and check out the show notes for his contact info.